This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you. Welcome to the webinar on the IT and ethic review. I'm going to hand it straight over to the analysis group. Just so you know, we're not going to do a roll call, but we're going to take attendance and we'll have that on the wiki page for the ethics review. Thank you so much, and over to Chris and Greg. I think you have presenter rights, so you can walk everyone through the presentation at your own pace. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you, Lars. And this is Greg for the record. I will kick it off, but Chris and I will be passing it back and forth as we kind of go through the presentation. So thank you for joining. We'll just begin with a little bit of an introduction to ourselves. So I think as many of you know, but perhaps not everyone, we were hired by ICANN as the independent examiner to conduct an independent review of the ESAC. We bring, I think, a nice set of experience as it pertains to working on this project. In particular, Dr. Shlomo Hirschkopf and Professor Steve Weber bring really kind of decades of experience working on domain name operations and internet security. Chris and I also have some experience in that area as well. But then we also bring a fair amount of experience when it comes to working with nonprofit governance and volunteer-based organizations like ICANN. We've worked on a number of past ICANN reviews, as well as the design of interview and survey instruments. Chris, I don't know if you want to give a little bit of an introduction to yourself and Shlomo and Steve now.
Hi, sure. Thanks, Greg. My name's Chris Lopp, also with Analysis Group. My background was originally in engineering, master's in data science, to work on a lot of our cybersecurity and other technology-related cases here at AG. So sort of bringing that to help with this particular effort. We also are partnered with Dr. Shlomo Hirschkopf, who is a director of engineering at Allure Security Technology, Inc. So he is sort of, you know, managing, coordinating teams that are building cybersecurity tools for their product. Prior to that, he was very involved in some of the sort of early DNS infrastructure of Columbia University, in addition to a role as an adjunct professor there. We've also partnered with Professor Steven Weber, who's at UC Berkeley. So he's a faculty director there for their Center of Long-Term Cybersecurity, which he co-founded. And they're very focused on sort of emerging cybersecurity threats and preparedness. And, you know, what kind of scenarios might the world see in the future? And, you know, how are the systems that exist robust or resilient to dealing with that kind of thing? And so both of them have been great, you know, assets to the team and, you know, involved in the discussions throughout.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Moving along now, we want to give just a little bit of an overview of the scope of our project and how it's designed before diving into our assessment findings. So with respect to the project scope, you know, it really has a number of kind of goals that are associated with it. So we, one of the things that we looked at was the implementation state of ESAC's prior review, what has been implemented, what hasn't, and if it hasn't, perhaps why. We're also looking at whether or not the ESAC has a continuing purpose within the ICANN structure. And, you know, kind of drilling down a little bit more deeply, how successfully the ESAC really fulfills its purpose, and whether there are areas where it might want to improve kind of going forward. And then the last kind of sub-bullet point on this slide, whether or not the ESAC is kind of appropriately accountable to the wider ICANN community and its various supporting organizations and advisory committees. So with respect to the project design, it's kind of designed as a two-step process. So we're towards the end of phase one, which is the assessment portion. And as part of this assessment, we began with reviewing a number of ESAC documents, work products, their operating procedures. We then moved on to interviewing individuals both during and after ICANN 61. We talked to 42 people. We then used those interviews to inform an online survey, which was distributed to the entire community. We received a nice number of responses from that survey. We've also been observing ESAC meetings, both at ICANN 61, but also at ICANN 62 in Panama. And then we developed an assessment report, which has been provided to the ICANN community for feedback. Once we get that feedback, we will then develop a set of recommendations. These will be published once again for public comment. We will also hold an open session at ICANN 63 where we will present our recommendations along with our findings to solicit additional feedback. And then once we've received that feedback, we will ultimately put together a final recommendations report. And now, just to give you a little bit of sense for how we conducted the interviews and the survey, I'll at least briefly turn it over to Chris.
Great. Thanks, Greg. Yeah, so I like to think a little bit about the interviews as sort of the heart of, you know, what ends up becoming the assessment report, and that, you know, it's an opportunity to really understand what people are thinking and feeling and sort of experiencing as they interact with or on the SF. So you can imagine that gives a lot of nuance that can be combined with survey results and other items down the road for those who've reviewed their assessment report and seen it there. So to give you the idea, these interviews are semi-structured, and they lasted approximately 45 minutes. That wasn't a hard cutoff. Many went over. And really, you know, there were a couple different bullets you can see on the slide here for what we were trying to find out, you know, the purpose and extent to which SAC fulfills that purpose, membership size, structure, diversity, methods of setting the committee's focus, internal and external communication, transparency, you know, implementation and development of the last review. And you know, with the limited amount of time to talk, we sort of, for different individuals, we were semi-structured in that we had a list of questions to sort of orient the conversation. But based on each individual's unique experiences with the SAC, we would sort of go down different avenues, or perhaps, you know, later in the interview process, we would, you know, ask follow-ups based on things we had heard in prior interviews. So in addition to this, you know, the interviewees were really encouraged to share both strengths and weaknesses of the SAC and, you know, their own suggestions for improving the SAC, so that, you know, we're hearing both the good and also the places for continual refinement. So, you know, in all, we conducted 42 interviews. A number of those were at ICANN 61 in Puerto Rico. A number were also remotely after. So you can get a sense of the distribution here of your SAC members, ICANN board members, ICANN staff and fellows, and then SOs and ACs. So, you know, of course, more SAC members were interested in being invited and spoken with, but, you know, a lot of others weighed in as well. Next, please, Greg. In terms of gender composition, it was, you know, somewhat skewed towards males for sure. We did have, you know, 8 or so females that we interviewed, and there was an effort to be as balanced there as could be. And then in terms of geographic location, you know, interviewees skewed somewhat to Europe and North America. Being in Puerto Rico probably didn't help with that, but you know, there are some voices from Africa, from Latin America, the Caribbean, and from Asia, Australia, and the Pacific.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Let me see if I can get that text to show. There we go. After we finished the interviews, both at ICANN 61 and after, we then moved into developing a survey that was distributed online and was, you know, really designed to cast as wide a net as possible so that people who, for whatever reason, didn't have a chance to get interviewed or perhaps didn't want to get interviewed could still provide their feedback on both the strengths and weaknesses of the SAC. This was informed by what we learned in the interviews. So, you know, I think there were a lot of relatively similar questions that we asked in the survey as we did in the interviews, but they were slightly tweaked based upon things that we were learning as we were going through the interview process. And then the survey was open for a little bit more than a month. It went live on April 18th, rather, and then was closed on May 25th. So we received 52 complete responses for the survey, and then there were some people who completed part of the survey but not all of it. So there were a total of 80 kind of partial or complete responses. And our results really don't change if you either include or kind of exclude individuals who only completed a portion of the survey. So this figure on this slide just shows the breakdown by kind of organizational affiliation within ICANN as to who actually completed the survey. So, you know, a fairly large number of SAC members completed it, but we also had individuals from ICANN staff, board members, the GNSO, and some of the other SOs and ACs who opted to respond to the survey. In terms of the gender breakdown, it's pretty similar to what we saw in the interview. So mostly men, but some women. And then in terms of the regional breakdown, it was also relatively similar to what we saw from the interviews. So mostly North America, but then we did have at least some individuals from the other ICANN regions that responded to the survey. And now we'd like to dive into what we actually found and what we heard. So let's go into a discussion of the assessment report results themselves. I think what we heard pretty resoundingly was that the ESSEC is performing at a very high level and plays a very important role within ICANN. But I think almost everyone that we talked to had some areas where they thought the ESSEC could improve a little bit. So we developed this 58-page assessment report, which I'm sure some of you have had a chance to review. It has 22 assessment points, and these are really just broken down into the kind of six broad areas that are identified in some of the sub-bullets on this slide. And what we'll do now is we'll start kind of going into each of these areas in a little bit more detail. And for that, I will turn it over to Chris for now.
Great. Thank you, Greg. Thank you. And as Greg mentioned, you know, we're really just giving the highlights and an overview here. So, you know, to the extent that you have interest in a particular line here, you know, feel free to go into the assessment report and look at it. And we'll talk at the end about avenues for you to reach out and sort of give us your feedback if you want to take another, you know, pass and think about the document some more. So the first set of findings relate to the ESSEC's overall effectiveness. And this bullet point one is that the ESSEC is widely acknowledged to be very important to the overall mission of ICANN, and that the ESSEC's, you know, role is very closely aligned with the ICANN's mission. This is something we heard, you know, over and over again in the interviews. I think only, you know, one person asked did not feel like the ESSEC was very important, and here you can see, you know, survey respondents all are saying very important or important, but a little bit neutral. Just to aid an interpretation of the figure here, you can see we have broken up the color based on the affiliation of the respondent broadly. The blue would be members of the ESSEC, green the ICANN board, orange SSNACs, and gray other. You'll notice there's 74 respondents here, so for these particular figures, we are including those partial responses, but all of our results are robust. We've looked at the cuts with only complete responses. You know, we've done some cleaning to make sure we're not, you know, miscounting or anything like that. That's all been handled under the hood. I think I can just go to the next slide myself. Let's see. Here's the next button. Great. Point number two is that, you know, we heard from individuals throughout ICANN that the ESSEC is very successful in providing high quality advice on a broad variety of relevant SSR issues. Security, stability, and reliability issues. So, you know, here's just sort of one cut of that, looking at the frequency of ESSEC publications over time. And in the prior review, it was found that, you know, the ESSEC provides many different documents to the ICANN community. You know, that trend has certainly continued. So you can see reports, advisories, comments coming out through 2017. This figure's a snapshot through May 10th. So there have been 2018 documents that have come out that are not represented. Of note here, you know, the ESSEC recently started a new ESSEC correspondence series, which focuses more on documents to interact with the community, less necessarily on strictly security advice. And you can see that's been a very popular tool in just the first 3 months of the year, or sorry, 5 months of the year. 13 of those documents had been published. On that same point, you know, we also asked people their general opinion on the effectiveness or ineffectiveness of outcomes from sort of ESSEC's advice. You know, when you think about ESSEC's advice, is it useful, is it effective, is it used, that kind of thing, you know, sort of broadly, the results were generally positive. People saying effective or very effective. For people who had said, you know, neutral, ineffective, very ineffective, there was the option for them to provide more detail, which is some of what colors the assessment report if you go look at that. So all of that's been thought about, but the result was, you know, very positive here. One of the questions we also asked was, you know, what would you consider the most important areas for the ESSEC to improve upon? And some of these topics will be touched throughout the rest of this deck, but the top response here was developing processes to provide advice in a more timely fashion. A number of them sort of relate to engagement with stakeholders, developing relationships with SOACs, soliciting feedback more often, that kind of thing. And then you can sort of see the rest here in the figure 12 of the assessment report. Assessment finding number 3 had to do with that timing bullet. And we heard sort of two different items there. The first is that, there's some concern among members of the SDAC that advice provided to the ICANN board is not acted on in a timely manner. And similarly, there's some members of the ICANN community who are saying, they wish the SDAC could provide advice more quickly or more in line with other decision-making timelines or items like that. So on the first half of that, figure 13 here shows, how often ICANN's board is thought to implement advice given to them by the SDAC. So this isn't the timing bit, it's just how often does it happen. And the results here show that, very often, and neutral seem to be predominant results, but, a lot of the data falls on, the ICANN's board is, frequently implementing advice based on the SDAC. Not very many people think it's a rare occurrence or not often happening. On the timely bit, this figure is showing how timely or untimely the ICANN board is in reacting to SDAC's advice. Notably, nobody found it to be a very timely manner. A good amount thought it was somewhat timely, but a decent amount of people felt as though, it's somewhat untimely or neutral. There's a discussion in the assessment report about sort of the board advice tracker and use of that sort of is reflecting a bit on perhaps ways that tool could be used differently or more effective or ways to address this. But a lot of that will come out in the recommendation report that's to follow. The fourth point is really that the SDAC's board liaison is key to ensuring the board is able to interpret and understand the advice provided by the SDAC. This is something we heard a lot from board members in interviews. Board members have a lot going on at once, and so regardless of how clear the SDAC's advice document is, having someone there to sort of say, hey, these are the things that you need to focus on in the context of your current decision making or in the context of, what's going on more broadly, has been very effective and useful. You can see that in the bar chart here as well. That sort of describes the relationship between the SDAC and the ICANN board, which is very good, which in part, reflects upon the liaison. And there's more discussion of that in the assessment report, particular things that have been useful. Item number 5 here, I don't have a bar chart for, but the largest impediment that people time and time again told to us for the SDAC success is really the fact that the organization is volunteer-based but has a lot of work to do. And there are some survey questions in the report that will show this quantitatively. But a lot of SDAC volunteers express that they've been subject to an increasing amount of requests, both in number, people from other SOs and ACs wanting to get security opinions, the board coming with questions, but also in scope. So the NCAP name collision process is one example that has featured quite prominently at some meetings and recent ICANN meetings. And that's just a large process, a large project that's sort of unprecedented compared to the prior scale of things that the SDAC has been asked to take on. And so people identify this as a sort of largest impediment and something to think about, how to address this moving forward. Finally, within the subcategory, one thing that we've heard but also observed is that, the SDAC's processes of generating advice is very collegial, very effective. I think, there's a lot of respect within the SDAC's internal, even the private meetings. People are looking to hear from each other, looking to understand what different viewpoints are, and taking it seriously, taking collaboration seriously. We've seen people sort of say their preconceived notions out loud for the room to understand where they're coming from. People question each other spiritedly, but professionally, and I think that has come across quite nicely. In addition, we've seen numerous occasions of the SDAC working to understand the big picture sort of, you know, asking questions of their liaison or trying to sort of understand how their work fits into the whole. And as part of that, you know, keeping an eye on the remit of the SAC and terminating work if it looks like maybe it won't be useful or maybe it will go out of bounds of the charter or the bylaws. And finally, the SAC support staff was widely praised, and we saw this in our own meetings. Their ability to sort of, you know, help keep track of everything going on, provide, you know, timelines, provide useful trackers to the admin committee, all of that, only positive things were said to us there. The next area of our results have to do with the topic selection process of the SAC. So for those who are less familiar, you know, the SAC publishes these documents that have advice, and they fall in a variety of categories, but, you know, due to the time availability of the SAC, you know, not all of what it does has to do with, you know, things it's been asked to do, but the SAC is sort of proactively thinking about security and thinking about what's important to say and important to do. And so from our conversations, you know, it's apparent to us the SAC is very well prepared to deal with emerging security threats. There's a broad amount of expertise, a deep amount of expertise and knowledge, and the SAC has been effective at sort of identifying things to talk about in advice documents. It was noted that there's not a formal procedure, for example, in the operating procedures of the SAC geared towards scanning sort of the landscape and identifying new threats to help set resource priorities that way. It definitely happens informally at many locations in the SAC's processes. But some interviewees indicated that, you know, while threats are potentially rapidly evolving, you know, things are getting more complicated with an interconnected world, you know, maybe there could be some value in developing a little bit more formality to processes by which the SAC thinks about the security ecosystem. So this slide here, you know, sort of reflects that first point. You know, a lot of people think the current process is effective, so some are neutral on it. They find it ineffective. Nothing seems obviously broken and sort of, you know, the layman takeaway there. There are some other figures on this in the report itself as well. The next broad category of the assessment report has to do with the SAC's interaction and involvement with other SOs and ACs. I think in interviews, a lot of, you know, or people throughout the ICANN community talk about this quite a bit, because I think there's a general understanding of the importance of security, and for that finding number one, you know, there is this overlap in sort of the role of the SAC and in ICANN's mission in a way that, you know, puts security and stability in a lot of different conversations. So this first bullet is sort of a reflection on, you know, what is the SAC's role in that ecosystem. And so, you know, I think it's been undisputed that, you know, there is a need for individuals with an understanding of security issues to take part in PDP processes and, you know, to be involved with various groups within the ICANN community. Some people suggest that the SAC should be the one to do that. You know, SAC members should be on all these committees, go to it, get involved in policy development, and play that role. Others say, hold on, the SAC already has a lot happening. You know, this isn't really a fair burden to expect, and really the role of the SAC is to play a technical advice audit verification role, you know, provide its advice but not get into the weeds of policymaking itself. So you'll see discussion of this in the assessment report, and obviously it'll be picked up again in the recommendation report. This particular bar chart is showing, you know, how often is the advice given by the SAC incorporated into the policy development process of SOs and ACs. And I will say, you know, because as Greg showed earlier, you know, there weren't a lot of respondents from any one SO or AC, I wouldn't read too much into this large amount of don't know, unsure, just because I think, you know, if you sat down a bunch of members of any one of these SOs and ACs and you know, hold them on the question directly, you just get more information. But looking at this and sort of, you know, drawing with conclusions that we can see a number of people feel like it's very often or often, but the majority feel like it's sometimes used. So not that it's being ignored. But there are people who say, you know, not often, rarely, or never. And I think that matches what we heard in some interviews, you know, where some individuals definitely said, oh, I feel technical, I look at this, and some individuals sort of said, well, you know, I figure other people are doing this. Another question that we asked was this, how satisfied or unsatisfied are you with the current level of action outside of SOs and ACs? And the assessment point here associated with it is, you know, people both inside and outside of the SAC identified that creating more interaction, both with SOs and ACs, but also more broadly, should be an area of focus for the SAC ahead. And really, you know, a lot of people reflected in the past couple of years, a little bit more than that, the SAC has been more present. You know, people have mentioned the ways that the SAC has participated in, for example, you know, the meetings of the SOAC's chairs, or, you know, discussing certain items. And so I think that's definitely come across as something that the SAC is focused on and that the community would like to see. Here in the bar chart, you can see, you know, the very small number of people who are very satisfied, but a decent amount somewhat satisfied and a lot of neutral and somewhat unsatisfied or, you know, very unsatisfied. So I think there's agreement both on the SAC and off the SAC generally that there's space for more interaction.
Great, thanks, Chris. So then the next set of questions that we posed to both people that we interviewed, but then on the survey, were kind of around the current size of the SAC and kind of various attributes of the membership. And so, you know, I think one thing that we heard quite clearly and loudly, not loudly, but, you know, but consistently, I guess, is that the SAC has, you know, really wide-ranging and deep technical expertise. I'm actually going to skip ahead to the bar chart that's on the next slide, just figure 27 as it's labeled. For the people who answered this question, you know, most people more people than not said that it either was effective at covering kind of the areas of expertise that it needs to, or they were slightly neutral on it. Some people did indicate that the SAC might be a little bit ineffective in covering all areas of expertise. And what we heard in the interviews and in some of the surveys as well was that there was an interest in having perhaps even more representation of individuals from, you know, legal and or policy backgrounds. They would still obviously need to have some of that technical expertise, but to have a little bit more of this kind of legal or policy background, at least some individuals thought that would be helpful. We also asked individuals whether or not the current size of the SAC was appropriate, and by and large, people thought that it was. There's obviously a trade-off between having a larger and a smaller SAC, but most people indicated that the current size of the SAC did a good job of balancing kind of the pros and cons of different sizes. We also asked about the recruiting that the SAC undertakes to identify new members to add to the SAC. And here I think there was a lot more variation in terms of what individuals thought about the SAC's current recruiting operations. You know, it's a little bit of an ad hoc process where people are identified typically by other SAC members. And so at least some individuals thought that it could be beneficial to have kind of a more kind of rigorous, maybe isn't quite the right word, but kind of a more comprehensive and defined process for recruiting new members. Let me find that arrow. There we go. We also asked individuals what they thought about the diversity of the current SAC along a number of different dimensions, and those are shown in this figure 30 on this slide. And you know, I think the two areas that people were most likely to note where the SAC was a little bit less diverse than perhaps they would like to see it were in gender and in geography. There were certainly some other areas, so, you know, age or background and expertise, but it's certainly in the interviews we heard about gender and geography pretty frequently. And then we also asked a couple of questions to both interviewees and survey respondents about kind of the effectiveness of the membership committee itself on the SAC when it's reviewing current SAC members. And by and large, we heard that the membership committee is effective, its processes are clear, it generally follows those processes, and so we didn't hear much in the way of kind of any need for improvement for the actions of the membership committee itself on the SAC. And then finally, with respect to size and membership, we asked both about term length and term limits. So almost everyone thought that a term length of 3 years for SAC non-leadership members is appropriate, and that there should be no term limits for these non-leadership members. For the leadership members of the SAC, so for the chair and vice chair, individuals thought that the term length of 3 years was also appropriate, but there was more diversity in terms of whether or not there should be a term limit on how long the chair or the vice chair could actually serve. So some people thought that there shouldn't be, but there were certainly some individuals who thought that the chair and the vice chair should be term limited to some extent. And now I'll turn it back over to Chris.
Thanks, Greg. So the next bucket of items we were looking into is the transparency and accountability of the SAC. And I think, you know, there was a lot of discussion around transparency in the interviews, partially because with any security issue, there's a trade-off between what's known as responsible disclosure and the ability to be transparent, right? So, you know, you could imagine if the SAC was disclosing every potential security risk they were looking into, they would develop a following of hackers who then try to potentially race them to find problems, right? Or, you know, use that information for nefarious purposes. So, you know, privacy in that regard is important for security, but at the same time, you know, one of the principles of ICANN has to do with transparency, and I think, you know, a lot of people want to know what's going on in the SAC. You know, I think the finding here is the SAC is generally seen to be less transparent than other parts of ICANN. And while most interviewees understand this to be necessary, given the sensitive nature of these security risks, potential security risks, you know, many people would like to see a more transparent SAC. And we heard that, you know, from some members of the SAC's leadership, but also from members of the community. So you can see here in this particular question, you know, we had asked, how do you feel the SAC's level of transparency balances with this kind of competing value? And you'll notice, you know, the majority of respondents think the SAC should be more transparent. A good amount feel the current balance is correct. You know, interestingly, you know, more members of the SAC and all respondents from the ICANN board felt as though the current balance was correct. But you know, there are members of the SAC who feel like more transparency should be there. Notably, nobody thought that the SAC is too transparent, which is actually, in a way, an important result, because if the SAC was too transparent for, you know, potential security risks, obviously that would be quite bad. So the SAC is taking its role seriously in this regard. We jump to point 19 here. I'll circle back to 18 in a second. This point is that the SAC has mechanisms to allow for a disclosure of conflict of interest. So conflict of interest is interesting on the SAC because it is a volunteer organization, because the volunteers are not paid, and because they're required to have deep expertise that oftentimes comes from industry experience. You know, members of the SAC are going to have day jobs, and to some extent, some people indicate that conflicts of interest are unavoidable. So thinking processes first, you know, we reviewed sort of the mechanisms for disclosure of conflict of interest that seemed to be in place, that seemed to be used. Members who we talked to and witnessed seemed, you know, very comfortable calling out each other's conflicts of interest if they feel like there's something there. And, you know, some members of the SAC indicated that, you know, these limited conflicts of interest are unavoidable, and others believe that, you know, a little more can be done to limit potential conflicts. For example, you know, maybe making an effort to have even more academics on the SAC, although some were definitely already on the SAC. In terms of the current recusal policies, respondents are very satisfied and somewhat satisfied. The next slide shows this more broad question of, you know, what do you perceive as the current level of conflict of interest on a sort of this informal 1 to 5 scale, with 1 being low and 5 being high. And, you know, most people put it sort of in the middle at a 3. These next 2 points don't have a figure associated with them, but, you know, through our conversations and our sort of looking through how the ESSAC functions. In terms of accountability, the ESSAC is accountable directly to the ICANN board. The ICANN board decides who gets to be on the ESSAC, and while the ESSAC, you know, makes recommendations, ultimately it's on the board to decide what to do with that. The board can also, you know, remove or change, you know, the function of the ESSAC via the bylaws or via, you know, removing members. So, you know, the ESSAC is accountable to the ICANN board, and you know, I think the conversation around that has been most people think that's the appropriate way to go, because the ESSAC needs to be able to say, you know, things that might be uncomfortable if it's in the interest of security, and accountability to the ICANN board seems appropriate in that regard. The other note here is a more minor note, but, you know, we did a review of the ESSAC's website as part of this process, and, you know, we do find there is a lot of information there that assists with transparency. So there's sort of, you know, three times a year planning documents. There are, of course, the ESSAC's advice. Now there's the correspondence series. There's information on who is on the ESSAC, what their potential, you know, other engagements or potential conflicts might be. And that's all kept up to date and very regularly updated. There's also access to the ESSAC's bylaws for people who want to sort of see how the ESSAC functions at a more nuanced level. At the same time as all that, you know, a lot of people commented on ways that perhaps the website could be even more useful. And that's something that you can see more points about in the assessment report itself. Great. So the last general bucket here has to do with the ESSAC's ability or progress in implementing its prior review and also its sort of self-improvement. So one of our tasks was to look at the last review, which took place over 2008 and 2009, and came up with 33 recommendations aimed at improving the ESSAC. Now, if you want to get into the weeds, we have an appendix in the report that discusses each of these and what happened. We found that, you know, generally everything had been implemented, and the only caveats we could find were, you know, minor things. So, for example, one of the recommendations was for the ICANN board to study the issue of paying a stipend or honorarium to ESSAC leadership and ESSAC members. We've not been able to find evidence of such a study being done, but that was more of a to-do for the ICANN board than the ESSAC. Another note was, you know, one of many sort of bullets as part of number 13 was to provide advance notice in the form of a professional heads up when uncomfortable situations might come about as a result of ESSAC advice. Now, I think the ESSAC by and large has done this. There were a couple of small nits of people saying, hey, I was surprised by this thing. You know, this thing, you know, could have been communicated to me more in advance. And so, you know, we sort of talk about that as something to keep attention on. And then item 16 was directing the ESSAC to keep and publish meeting minutes on the website in a timely fashion. And per the transparency's point before, you know, detailed meeting minutes to the public could potentially cause a lot of trouble. But what we did do is we reviewed the ESSAC's internal wiki space and internal documents, and the ESSAC does keep very detailed meeting minutes of everything that it's doing there. So, you know, this information exists, it's just secured. So. And then the final 22nd report really has to do with the ESSAC's values. You know, one thing that really stood out to us in this review, especially having, you know, conducted other reviews in the past, the ESSAC seems to very clearly value self-improvement and make efforts to continually improve. You know, we've noticed this just in the way that the ESSAC has sort of wholeheartedly told us, you know, hey, we want to know the bad and the good. You know, while we were in the process of being contracted, the ESSAC review work party did a proactive internal analysis and sort of thought about, hey, what can we do? And, you know, when we were involved, we saw the ESSAC sort of in real time starting to implement changes based on that, updating its internal skill matrix, doing things like that. And for the most part, you know, a lot of the things in this assessment report were not surprises. It was, you know, the ESSAC's already discussing transparency and looking forward to sort of, you know, seeing where the review goes on that process. So that's the finding here.
Great, and I think with that, we'll just briefly discuss next steps on the project, and then we'll open it up for any questions that you all might have. So this shows the entire project timeline. Kind of the lightly grayed and shaded text are things that we've already completed. We are currently at step 8, which is presenting the assessment report, and it's really not just at ICANN 62, but of course today to solicit feedback more broadly. We will then provide some draft recommendations to the ESSAC review working party in August. Once we've had a chance to correspond a little bit with them, we will then publish a final report for public comment beginning in mid-September. It will be open for at least a month for public comment. And then we'll also, like we mentioned at the start of the presentation, be holding a public session at ICANN 63 to present our recommendations, but to get feedback as well. And then the final report is scheduled to be published on November 21st. And then I think with that, I'd like to go ahead and do. Yeah, of course.
Sorry, I just wanted to comment on the last slide. I think we were talking to Lars about, you know, item number 10,
yeah.
And the original 40-day comment period ends in the middle of ICANN 63. And I think we're probably going to end up extending that to the end of ICANN 63, just not to cut it off in the middle there. So if anyone
knows
that,
good point.
Just wanted to let you know.
Great. Sorry. And I think with that, we will open it up for any questions that you all might have. So I see a question from John in the chat. I haven't seen your comment yet, John, but we'll certainly be looking at it, and we'll think about how to best address it. Chris, I don't know if you have thoughts. I think we did maybe see something like this in the survey results as well, and maybe that's what you're referencing, John, but we certainly that's certainly something that we'll be considering.
This is Lars. Just to add to what Greg just said, and for the record for everybody, the public, I think the comments that are being received are usually being addressed through forthcoming iterations of the reports. So I'm sure that the analysis group will address all comments received, whether it's being oral or in written form, through face-to-face meetings or public comments or just the consultation email submissions. In the updated, I believe the next one will be the draft final report, which will then kind of take into consideration what was being presented or being, submitted to the analysis group during this public consultation period. And so that's usually when those comments are being addressed. Thanks for that. Right, this is Lars. It looks like there are no other questions. I'd like to thank the analysis group for their presentation. I'm also very impressed that they managed to talk very coherently through 47 slides in less than 47 minutes. I think that that itself is a great accomplishment. Of course, for their work on this report. Just a quick note, the public consultation period, I believe, will end the end of next week. If anybody has any comments, you can submit that to the MSSI Secretariat email address. And maybe Yvette, if you could just quickly put that into the chat, that would be super helpful. Otherwise, you can always reach out. There it is. Thank you so much. On the screen right now. Otherwise, you can also reach out directly to any of the consultants of the analysis group, of course, or any of the staff from MSSI. And I'm sure even if you send it on to the chairs of the ESSAC review working party, they would be happy to send it on to us to make sure everything is recorded appropriately. I thank you very much. The recording of this call will be obviously posted on the wiki page. If you have any further questions, please don't hesitate to reach out. And I'm happy to give you 14 minutes of your day back. Thank you so much. And Yvette, please end the recording.